Hi, this is Helen, and thank you for joining me for a cup of teal. Teal is shorthand for the future of work. It means bringing your whole self to work, a focus on purpose and self-management. And this podcast is a chat over a cup of tea with the people who are making this happen in health, care, and public services. Stories of self-management in action. Two of our values in wellbeing teams are compassion and curiosity. And in this podcast, Emily explains how we've been using nonviolent communication, or compassionate communication as we call it, to help us live these values in practice, and how it relates to the core of self-management, of taking responsibility for yourself and being accountable to each other.
So I'm Emily McArdle, and I work for wellbeing teams. I'm a national advisor and I lead on compassionate communication. I also work with Helen Sanderson Associates, and in my other life, I'm a speech and language therapist working in the NHS.
Now, for me, Emily, compassionate communication, or nonviolent communication as it's sometimes called, has been such an opportunity to grow and develop and to keep practicing on how I show up with compassion. Please, can you explain to people why we see this as so important in wellbeing teams?
Well, nonviolent communication, as you say, or compassionate communication, is a way of communicating together where we are seeking to be ever more compassionate. So we are trying to understand and acknowledge needs in other people, to listen with empathy and to speak to one another with empathy, so that we can connect at a much deeper level, really, and recognize in each other what we both need so that we can come to some sort of solution. So it's a deeper than a conflict resolution kind of a process, and we think that it's absolutely vital, particularly in a self-organizing team, that we have a practice or a process to communicate with one another, so that we can bring things up when we need to, raise tensions, we can ask for things that we need, and where we see something that might not be working well, that we can express that to one another in a way that the other person can listen to with open ears, if you like. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it certainly does to me. And when you say ears, I think about you and giraffe ears and giraffes and jackals. Can you explain what I mean for other people's benefit?
Yes. Yeah, so Marshall Rosenberg, who was the psychologist who introduced this concept, talks about jackals and giraffes. So jackals being the kind of primeval way that we can react to something we hear that we perceive as a threat or against our needs. So jackals have their noses to the ground. They are known to be kind of aggressive. And on the other hand, we've got giraffes. And giraffes are the land mammals with the biggest hearts. They also have a long neck, and they can step back and look at a problem from above, take away this reactive quality that a jackal might have, and be able to observe what's happening and then take it further to connection. So we talk about that sounds a bit jackally, or this feels like we're being giraffe, as a way to think about those concepts.
Thank you. And one of my fond memories of the inductions that we've done in wellbeing teams is you turning up with literally a fluffy jackal and giraffe or ears. Can you explain how we try and embed compassionate communication? Because although it starts in induction, we don't believe that just doing a day or half a day in induction is going to crack this.
Yes. And I think when we first started looking into this, we saw it as a process. So there are four steps to a component of nonviolent communication or compassionate communication, which would be observation, feelings, needs, and requests. And I think we saw it as a bit of a process that we could teach people those four components and send them on their way. But what we're discovering is that this is a practice. This isn't a process that you can learn in one training. and then go away and run with it. It's something that you need to be constantly paying attention to. A bit like if you were to do meditation, you would have to do meditation practice and that never ends. This feels a little bit like that. So we introduce people to the concepts and components of compassionate communication at induction. And then we have so we've been introducing little taster sessions that could be popped into team meetings. So 15-minute focus guided around the compassionate communication there. We're looking at adding in kind of what if, so posting scenarios once a week and asking people to use compassionate communication to think about them. We're doing hour-long online sessions with people who want to learn a little bit more, so kind of teaching sessions, if you like. We also have a compassionate communication club where some of us meet on a monthly basis, and we, a little bit like a book club really, we have something that a focus, and then we discuss how we're doing and work on our own practice. And we also have one-to-one coaching. We coach one another as it shows up. And I think we're trying to use it in many of our communications with each other, both written and emails and verbal as well. So there's just a whole raft. And I think it's something, as I said before, that you can't just tick the box and say you've done training in it. I think it's a practice, because it's a completely different way of thinking about language. And I guess that's, you know, why the speech therapist in me finds this so fascinating, because it's about reframing the way we use words in order to connect much better with people.
Thank you. That's really helpful. When I was doing the Holacracy coaching a few months ago, I was surprised that they talked quite a lot about nonviolent communication and equivalent authentic relating they mentioned as well as something in a similar space. How do you think this relates to raising and addressing tensions, which of course we're trying to do in wellbeing teams in team meetings? But what's your perspective on that?
I mean, I think it gives us a new vocabulary with which to do that, so that we can recognize our needs, which obviously is a fundamental part of raising attention, and those of other people in a way that we do without judgment. Because what we do in the way that we communicate and the way we've all been socialized to communicate is this kind of language of I'm right, you're wrong, this is good, that's bad. And we use language of judgment all the time. And so if we can raise something and take away that judgment, the people that we're talking to will hear what we need in a way that kind of inspires them to act with compassion. So for example, if I wanted to raise something with you, Helen, which I might do at a meeting, or I might do individually, and if I said something like, you know, I'm frustrated, Helen, because you're ignoring my emails, what I'm doing is I'm putting a judgment on that. You know, I feel ignored actually implies that you are purposefully choosing not to respond to me. And if you said to me, well, Emily, what are you observing here? I might say, I'm observing that I emailed you and I didn't get a response in 2 days. That feels very different. And I need to know that you've had my email. So I'm asking, could you respond just to say that you've had it? You know, that as an example, you can see how that takes some of the language out of it that could cause you to react in a way that could be defensive or excusing yourself or blaming me back, saying, well, you never sent me the emails at the time that I get them, you know, all that kind of thing. So we take out that raft of miscommunication and we deepen that to say, what is it that I need? So why am I feeling frustrated when I don't get an immediate response? Is this about my need to be seen and heard? Is it about my need to belong in this group? You know, for example, there's a whole raft of universal needs that we all share. And in expressing that to you and to other people, you can connect with that and try and respond in helping me to get my need met.
It certainly helped me try and move away from blame and criticism. And you and I were in a conversation yesterday because one of our colleagues from another wellbeing team had posted something where it looked like they were blaming somebody for not getting back to them quickly. And it sounded like they were justifying why they hadn't done something they were supposed to have done. But your response, Emily, was fascinating because you didn't engage in, yes, I'm irritated with her as well. You went for, I wonder what she needs. And I think that for me symbolizes the difference in how we'd respond to each other is when people are behaving in certain ways that you are more able, if you're practiced in this, to respond with empathy and compassion than with blame and colluding with being irritated with people.
Absolutely, because I think that ability to check yourself, to observe, gives you space to step back and be curious about what's going on for you and for the other person. So it's a really good way to practice self-compassion as well as compassion for others. So it's that kind of stopping and breathing and stepping back and think, actually, what am I observing here? And not layering it with all the stories that we tell ourselves about what's going on, to really look at fact. And that enables us then to quickly resolve something or move on or ask for what we need from that person. So, you know, being able then to say next time, to just let me know if I haven't responded to you, something like that, is a way that perhaps a year ago, a few months ago, I might not have been able to do because I was caught up in the reaction, not the observation.
And you mentioned there the stories that we tell ourselves, and, yes. and that's so much part of Brené Brown's work as well, about when she talks about resilience or learning to rise, when we've had a difficult situation, that we spend time asking ourselves, what's the story that I'm telling myself about this person or myself? And that completely resonates for me with how you have been helping us learn about compassionate communication. And as you say, it embodies or helps us live two of Wellbeing Team's values, compassion and curiosity. Now, I love one of the things that you've just started to introduce to the National Wellbeing Teams, because Emily, we are two women who love stationery and stuff.
We are.
You've got a great list of needs, feelings and needs. And one of the things that we're trying to do in the National Team, certainly, is do a minute of mindfulness to get in touch with how we're feeling. And then looking at the list of needs to be able to better express how we're feeling when we do our check-ins. So, for example, it's very easy, and I know we've had this in the past, for team members to go, oh, no, I'm great or I'm fine. Mm-hmm. But using this much more expressive list of needs has been really personally helpful to me. And you've got a beautiful set of cards of feelings and needs. So can you talk a bit more about how you see both us in Wellbeing Teams and other people using these prompts or resources to deepen our practice?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I was surprised in myself, actually, because as a speech and language therapist, I consider myself to have a wide vocabulary. And I've often worked with young people around emotions vocabulary, feelings vocabulary. But what I found is that we, as you say, we all too often just fall back into, I'm feeling great, I'm feeling fine, I'm feeling upset, and we have quite a restricted vocabulary. And so the lists of feeling words, so quite often online, I'll pop them up on the screen, won't I, or we'll have them in front of us. And with the cards as well, you can spread them out. It's a practice of really widening the vocabulary to pinpoint our feelings and the feelings that we have when needs are being met or when they're not being met, so that we can then use that to understand what it might be that we need. And we also have like a wheel of human needs that we use to try and identify what it is in a situation that both parties or all parties might be needing, seeing where the commonalities are. And I think it's about broadening our vocabulary in order to connect more deeply with a wider range of feelings, and therefore that takes us to the needs that we have that are either being met or not. And I, you know, this really links in with my understanding of all behavior is communication, and all action links to a need. So if I were to scratch my head, I have a need to feel physically comfortable, like I might do if I kind of put another jumper on because I was cold, or if I went to the fridge to get something to eat. I might have a need to fulfill hunger, but I also might have a need to have something to do, you know, to feel that I belong, if you like, because I'm eating and it's comforting to me. It might be an emotional comfort as well. So it's looking at our feelings as a way of seeing where our energy is coming from, and then how do we meet that in others. So I think we've got to get better, all of us, at having the right vocabulary to have explored what a need that we have might look like, how it lives in us, really.
Thank you. And you were personally really helpful to me last year when I had a difficulty in one of my relationships. Somebody was very, very upset with me, communicated that by email. I was confused and I didn't understand what I'd done to cause that level of distress, and asked her if she'd have a conversation with me, and she said she wouldn't. So I was left in a really difficult place with my feelings, and if I'm honest, I wanted to blame her and be cross with her and be upset with her. And I asked you to help me, and you did something that really took me by surprise. You asked me to think about what were my feelings and needs in relation to that exchange, but then you asked me to guess what she might be feeling and needing. And I found that so hard, Emily, because I just wanted to stay in a place of blame because yes. I felt that her behavior wasn't warranted. And it enormously helped me to get in touch with empathy and compassion in a different way. So even though I wasn't able to resolve it directly with her, you working with me around that did enable me to see it differently, to be curious about why she might be feeling like that, and to reflect on my behaviour differently. So that was really, really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's absolutely right. I think before we can look outwards to other people, we have to put the energy and the time into this self-compassion. So the giraffe looking at ourselves, if you like, so that we can totally have processed and understood our own feelings and needs in an empathetic, compassionate way before then we can turn that on other people. And sometimes we need to sit with that for a really long time before we're able to connect. And I imagine if you were to return to that conversation now, you know, 6 months on, whatever it was, you would possibly be able to look at the needs of the other person in a totally different way, because you've resolved what was going on for yourself. And that kind of self-compassion is so important. So, and often we dive into interactions without having stepped back and kind of stopped the clock for a little bit. And that's where clashes can come, and we can end up in a situation of conflict where we want to get to a position where we're problem solving together. How do we sort this out? And also there will always be a situation where the other person or people involved are not in a place where they're able to connect with you, and we can't ever change that. So we have to focus the energy on how we deal with that situation.
Yes, I completely agree. And I've really noticed over the last 6 months how compassionate communication is connected to so many of the other things that I personally hold dear and that we're seeing in wellbeing teams. Because a number of us did a 10-day compassion challenge recently, a radical compassion challenge. And that is based on some of Tara Brach's work. And she's introducing something called RAIN, which is, as you've just described, about recognizing your feelings, accepting that they're there, and nurturing yourself or being self-compassionate to yourself before you then decide how you want to respond or connect or address this with other people. So more and more, I'm seeing compassionate communication as absolutely central to how we work and how we live our values. And you're right, I did. I saw it as an ONFR process 2 years ago when we started to use it. So Emily, where will we be going next with this? How can we keep deepening our practice and understanding? And I know that you're doing more around becoming somebody who can lead and support others in compassionate communication.
Yeah, so personally, I'm hoping to go on an intensive nonviolent communication course, which is a kind of 10-day intensive practice, which I'm really excited about. But also I think it's things like developing our online offer to one another. So within our teams, thinking about how we can factor in monthly time to really go deeper into this and to practice together. I'm excited that we'll be, you know, to develop kind of one-day workshops that really look at the issues people are facing, the kind of themes around communication, and looking at how we can apply this practice. And just continuing to try and do a, you know, a daily, a weekly focus personally, and leading other people to that, and kind of nudging people all the time. So what are you needing? What are you observing here? What do you think your feelings are? So that people start to build in this vocabulary, as we talked about before, into their everyday life. But I think it's going to be a practice that will keep going forever. I can't see a time when we won't be learning and trying and doing better.
I completely agree. And I also agree that it's like mindfulness practice, and certainly like my mindfulness practice, about trying to do a little bit every day and keep coming back to noticing how I'm feeling and taking a breath. And finally, I've been fascinated in our work with Making Space, where we've been using the Ready cards and a series of sprints, how naturally thinking about how we communicate differently with each other and ask for what we need has been part of our learning there. Because I know that, for example, the HR team and the finance team have been looking at how they can take a more coaching approach to their colleagues when their colleagues make requests of them, and support colleagues to some, in some ways, respond differently. And even looking at what a series of, say, three emails might look like if you're prompting and supporting somebody to, for example, find something that they need to look for themselves rather than asking other people to give it to them. Just a very, very small example, how Making Space have wanted you to come in to support the teams to think about, well, how can you respond to people when they're making requests of you that don't feel reasonable or don't feel appropriate? And how can you respond in a compassionate and yet clear and coaching ways? So it's fascinating to see all the different places and ways that compassionate communication can help us. And personally, Emily, earlier this year, you and I spent some time together and you got the cards out and we talked a bit more about our feelings and needs. So I've also can see how personally in one-to-one relationships, just taking this approach can help us get to a different degree of depth with each other. So Emily, I'm so grateful personally for what you've introduced for wellbeing teams, how this is a challenge for me to find more ways to be compassionate with myself and others through compassionate communication. So any final comments or reflections as we end this podcast, Emily?
I would say to everyone, explore compassionate communication, because it's one of those things, as you start to see it, you can't unsee it. And the difference it's making to my relationships, both in the workplace and outside, is phenomenal. And I think if you really want to live a valley of compassion, then this is somewhere that you have to look.
Absolutely. And for us, it's completely central to self-management, where in order for us to be more accountable to each other and accountable to ourselves, being able to recognize what you're feeling and ask for what you need and raise and address tensions is at the heart of it. Thank you so much, Emily.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your reflections. Please tweet me. I'm at Helen@WBTeams. This podcast is a companion to Open Teams. On this podcast, we share the voices and stories of pioneering organizations in health, care, and public services. And on Open Teams, you can see the documents that they're using. Have a look at openteams.co.uk. And if you're interested in wellbeing teams, please come and find me on LinkedIn, where I share a weekly 2-minute film, or my blog site, helensanderson.net. And finally, if you're interested in self-management and need some support along the way, I'd love to hear from you. I'm at helen@wellbeingteams.org. Thank you.